free.
While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On The Radar News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and I'm here to keep you company on this Wednesday, the 29th of April, 2026. Now, as the week gains momentum, attention shifts from intention to early execution. Now, across the country, from Swakopmund to Rundu, Ochwarongo to Rudret, and Katimamolilo to Hobabas, the pace of activity is beginning to take shape, offering early signals of how the coming days may unfold. Now, today, we focus on traction on which sectors are moving from planning into tangible action. And where are we seeing early signs of delivery, and where might challenges already be surfacing? Now, those are the indicators that often define how the rest of the week develops. Namibia's economic outlook remains firmly in focus. Developments in infrastructure rollout and investment positioning continue to shape the country's trajectory within an increasingly competitive global landscape. Now, at this stage of the week, responsiveness and coordination are key as both public and private sector players begin to translate strategy into measurable progress. Now, young Namibians remain always central as a driving force behind much of this momentum. From startups to digital platforms, innovation is not slowing down. It is rather accelerating. Now, the critical question now is whether institutional frameworks, financing mechanisms, and policy environments are keeping pace with this wave of initiative. We're also tracking governance in motion beyond policy announcements. Attention is turning to implementation, how effectively plans are being executed, how well institutions are aligning, and whether early outcomes reflect stated priorities, and also where progress is visible, we'll definitely highlight it, and where gaps emerge, we'll take a closer look and also find reasons as to why. And as always, we remain grounded in the realities on the ground, because national direction ultimately matters most when it translates into tangible change in people's daily lives. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, do expect sharp insight, forward-looking analysis, and conversations that do set the tone for the days ahead. Because right here on the Radio News Analysis, we don't just follow the story, we track its direction. Now, let's get right into today's news and getting into analyzing it. Today, the Environment, Forestry and Tourism Minister, that is Indeleni Daniel, and stakeholders officially launched 3 state forest reserves in Windhoek. And those reserves are as follow: Kanovlei State Forest, which is situated in Otjojenjubu region along the Grootfontein-Tsunkwe Road, which is nearly 22,000 hectares, a vast living landscape of Kalahari, sandfeld palms, and woodlands. And then there is the Hamwei State Forest, which is located 45 kilometers from Rundu in the Kabango West region, measuring about 11,094 hectares of Kalahari woodland savanna, home to hardwood trees, wildfire, and local communities. And the third one is the Zambezi State Forest, Namibia's vital forest and wildlife corridor. It is a protected forest reserve located in the far northeast of Namibia in the Zambezi region, stretching from Kongola towards Katimamolilo and bordering Zambia, with a size of 142,162 hectares of broad-veld Kalahari woodland, dominated by Zambezi teak woodlands, shrublands, and grasslands. And it is the only vast Kier woodland in Namibia and one of the country's most important biodiversity areas. Now, governors were in the capital city of Windhoek. That is the governor of Zambezi region, Dorothy Kambula, the governor of Kabango West, Verna Sinimbo, and the governor of Otsutshenjuba, represented rather by Councillor Muchi, who is a regional councillor of Otsunkwe, to receive thorough handouts from the ministry on how to actually manage and take care of this reserves. Now let's get into understanding what it is all about. We'll start off with hearing from the minister's speech. That is Minister Indileni Daniel, Minister of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, which was read on her behalf by Sikongo Haihambo, the executive director in the ministry.
The launch of the Amaiti Kamaflay, the Zambezi State Forest Reserves, the first of their kind in Namibia. Gazetted in 2022 under the Forest Act of 2001, these reserves mark the transition from legal declaration to act management, from policy to implementation. The establishment of these reserves is not merely a policy choice, but a constitutional obligation. Article 95 of our constitution calls on government to safeguard ecosystems, maintain biodiversity, and ensure the sustainable use of natural resources for present and future generations. These reserves give practical effects to that mandate by securing ecologically important landscape under formal protection. Forests are more than environmental assets. They are pillars of economic stability, social well-being, and national resilience. They regulate climate, protect water systems, sustain biodiversity, and support rural livelihoods. Yet they face growing threats from deforestation, land degradation, wildfires, and climate change. The creation of these forest reserves is therefore a strategic response to safeguard ecosystems, strengthen governance, and ensure equitable, sustainable use of forest resources. Director of Ceremonies, ladies and gentlemen, please allow me to briefly highlight each reserve. The Hamai State Forest Reserve, Kabango West Region, spans 11,203 hectares along the Rundu-Karukurisa Road. Characterized by woodland savanna and supports important tree species, which offers opportunities for biodiversity conservation, land restoration, research, and community livelihoods. The Kamaflay State Forest Reserve in Otsutshenjuba region covers 21,954 hectares along the Grootfontein-Tsunkwe Road and is mainly dominated by woodland vegetation, which plays a vital role in conservation, research, and sustainable resource use. Thirdly, and lastly, the Zambezi State Forest Reserve in Zambezi region is the largest at 142,162 hectares. It is a significant ecological and socio-economic asset for this region and the nation. Together, these reserves expand Namibia's protected area network and strengthen ecological connectivity, including wildlife corridors across borders. Importantly, they are not fenced, which reflects Namibia's people-centered approach to conservation. Communities remain partners, benefiting from grazing rights, forest products, and participation in management. Conservation must support livelihoods, and communities are essential to a success. Forests also play a critical role in addressing climate change. These reserves act as carbon sinks, bolster economic ecosystem resilience, and contribute to Namibia's commitment under the Paris Agreement. The true value will be measured not by size alone, but how effectively they are protected, sustainably utilized, and how meaningfully they benefit their respective communities. Director of Ceremonies, today we hand over forest management plans and communication strategies to regional leadership. These tools will guide infrastructure development, fire management, monitoring, research, law enforcement, and community engagement. We must, however, confront challenges facing these areas, which include illegal logging, wildfires, poaching, and unregulated settlement. Criminal activities, including cattle theft in the Zambezi Reserve, demand coordinated responses. The Ministry therefore calls on all stakeholders, communities, traditional authorities, neighboring countries, and law enforcement to work together to curb these threats. Going forward, the Directorate of Forestry will focus on strengthening management effectiveness, improving governance, investing in infrastructure, and enhancing monitoring and enforcement. Our priority is not only to expand protected areas, but to manage them effectively for the benefit of current and future generations. We will continue to implement management plans, strengthen collaboration with regional and traditional authorities, promote sustainable forest-based enterprises, and improve fire management and law enforcement. I therefore call on all stakeholders, including government, regional councils, traditional leaders, communities, and development partners to unite in ensuring the success of these reserves. Director of Ceremonies, ladies and gentlemen, this launch is more than just the opening of three reserves. It is a reaffirmation of Namibia's commitment to sustainable development, environmental protection, and community empowerment. In closing, I extend my sincere appreciation to KfW, the Common Foundation, UNDP, and the Global Environment Facility for their invaluable support in making this possible. As we progress, we must continuously reflect on whether these areas are achieving their intended objectives, conserving the values for which they were established, and delivering meaningful benefits. These reflections must guide our actions, ensuring responsiveness, effectiveness, and continuous improvement. With unity of purpose and a shared vision for forests like nature, both people and nature, it is now my honor to officially launch the Hamai Kanoflei and Zambezi State Forest Reserves. I thank you. Indilele.
And that was the Executive Director in the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism, Sikongo Hayambo, speaking on behalf of Minister Indileni Daniel. Let's pause here now. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete opoye ekukulile oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana konongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu honda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onmura ikatu imwe mbali heali nola natu heali mbali no heali ile kumberewa mura hetatu natu mbali o hetatu matatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now joining us in studio telephonically is Johnson Dokosho, Director for Forestry under the Ministry of Environment, Forestry and Tourism. A very good afternoon to you, sir, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Afternoon, Juju. Nice to be here.
Pleasure is all mine. Mr. Dokosho, of course, it has been a wonderful event today hearing about state forest reserves, actually three of them. I think at this point, I would want you to break it down and speak in layman terminology. What is this reserves of this forest? Is it for the ministry trying to take land for itself, and or is it for the people? Tell the people so that they can understand the purpose of it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Juju. The state forest reserves, in a layman's term, is basically a piece of land that is protected by the state for the resources that's inside, which is, in this case, a forest resource.
Yeah.
But within the forest, you also have birds, you have animals, your wildlife, and you have medicinal plants. You have all these wild fruits and all these things, grazing grass and so on.
Mm.
So now the area basically has been declared officially as a state forest reserve, which means it has to be managed by the state.
Mm-hmm.
But the state is managing this area together with the people who live nearby these areas for them to be able to access many benefits from the forest. For example, somebody who lives next to the state forest will be able to go there and fetch firewood.
Mm.
He'll be able to go there and take his animal to graze.
Mm.
They will be able to go there and collect wild fruits, whether it's insects and so on, including Mopane worm and things like that.
Yeah.
So this is really an area that is earmarked for the benefit of the state, of the community, mm-hmm. but it's managed by the state.
Mm. Interesting. What was...
This concept has been, or the model has been actually working in other places, but in Namibia, this is the first time that we have managed to declare those three areas.
Mm. I want to find out what probably drove the ministry to reserve this forest. What are some of the reasons that they saw that motivated them to do that?
Well, one of the reasons is really to say that we are fast losing our forested areas.
Yeah.
Whether it's for agricultural expansion or in so many other land uses.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to ensure that, we at least keep some areas in their natural state, it was important that the government identified some of these areas that are still pristine, that are still, available, that can still be managed, so that we do not just, turn all our forested area into farmland and so on. So you need also to keep some area naturally so that you protect the ecosystem, and also for the future generation to be able to appreciate what kind of trees and so on and that used to occur,
mm-hmm.
After some many years and so on.
Mm. Interesting. What about for the purpose of perhaps looking to medication use, some of those plants and trees that can be used for medication? Will the state then perhaps also have this reserve be earmarked for those purposes? Like, for instance, we're talking about devil crow that perhaps can be found in those forests and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. In fact, some of these state forest reserves are laboratories for research organizations.
Mm.
The Hamoi State Forest, UNAM, and NAST take their research students over to this area to look at many opportunities and to look at the resources and what they can be used for and so on. So yes, these areas are available for that kind of purposes. We for example, were coming out of COVID-19, where we did not even have medicine. If we have these areas protected, so some of those plants could be explored, and maybe even some of the unknown diseases can be treated with some of the you know, chemicals and stuff that are found in some of these plants, because we need to preserve these plants so that they are available for all sorts of benefits that we can get, including medicinal purposes.
Mm-hmm. And finally, also, the ministry handed over some documents to the governors on how to manage this state forest reserves. Perhaps also get into that and the launch today, how the program went, whether it was successful, and of course, what you would also call the public to do, especially those living nearby those areas. What role should they perhaps play?
Yeah, due to the documents that we have handed over to the honorable governors, is really just a management plan on how to manage those areas. Now, within the management plan, there will be some do's and some don'ts. For example, you know, you do not allow for permanent settlement in the state forest. People can have their animal grazing there. They can have temporary shelters, but they may not, you know, cut trees, for example. They may not, without permits and so on, they may not do certain things.
Yeah.
And that's why that is really spelled out in the management plan that we have handed over to them. So today's launch was really to, you know, officially declare these areas as such, and also to inform the public that this particular areas are now under the management of the state,
mm-hmm.
and that we need to now also take care and make sure that we play our part when it comes to the conservation of this of this three state forest reserve that were launched today.
Mm. Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Jenson Dokosho. Pleasure to really engage you on this and for breaking down for us and the layman people also, just to understand what the state forest reserves are all about, to get it clearly that it is definitely for the communities and for the people, and obviously at the end of the day for the benefit of Namibia as a whole. So thank you so much. It looks like I've lost him there. Nonetheless, yeah, that was closing remarks. So as you get it, these reserves are mainly for the purpose of protection for the people in themselves as well. And now they are important because local communities depend on forests for firewood, for poles, for thatching grass, for medicinal plants, fruits, grazing, and other non-timber forest products. It also supports tourism and nature-based livelihoods to preserve. And of course, as we have noticed, mostly in communal lands, everybody wants to cut off their own portion, and this is my own, and therefore leave nothing for everyone else, and those who are perhaps unable to cut off a portion for themselves don't benefit or suffer in the long term, and therefore why it's necessary. And you also had him speak there that it has been done in other countries, but it's a first for Namibia, and for wildlife, the forest is home to elephants. That is the Zambezi State Forest that I'm speaking about now. It's home to elephants, to African wild dogs, to lions, to leopards, to buffalo, to kudu, sabo, raw antelope, and many rare bird species. It is a critical wildlife movement corridor within the Kabango Zambezi Transforest Frontier Conservation Area, that is the Kaza TFCA. Now, also, speaking in terms of tourism, it also then preserves, indigenous species, and then also preserves the area for tourists that may be traveling all the way far, even as far as European countries, to actually come and witness some of our wild dogs, some of those rare bird species. And if none of that is protected and guided, obviously it will go extinct. And of course, at this point in time, those who are into environment and forestry are very much advocative of keeping our species and not letting them go extinct. And then for the environment, it stores carbon, protects soils, supports rainfall patterns, and helped reduce land degradation, drought, and climate change impacts. And not so long ago, I believe it was last week, we spoke about climate change and forestry and trees play an important part in climate protection and climate resilience. So the longer or the more we plant trees and keep those existing trees already and prevent many people from cutting them down for wood, then, yeah, we actually play our part indirectly through the preservation of trees, indirectly play our part in terms of climate resilience and climate change. And you know, Namibia is arid. It is an arid country. Therefore, we have to also play our part. Now, what people can do themselves, or what some of the main problems that are already existing is the illegal lodging and unsustainable harvesting of valuable timber species in the Zambezi teak and clot, and frequent failed fires that destroy young trees and wildlife habitats. So when it's under the ministry, they can now combat and contain those fires. And clearing land, clearing for farming and settlements, causing forest fragmentation and habitat loss, as well as human wildlife conflict and increasing pressure from livestock grazing. And I think that's a common problem that we have come to notice over time, how elephants will come up in people's homes and households, and that needs to be definitely contained as soon as possible. Not somewhere last year, I'm not so sure when exactly, I spoke about so much money that the ministry had to compensate those who are affected by wild animals. Nonetheless, let's pause right here. This is On the Reading News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for more news coming your way.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Ipuranengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko tete opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi to danjuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarude dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamoiri nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile kumberewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu hatatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now joining me in studio telephonically is Roberto Garisap. He is a Yango driver's representative. A very good afternoon to you, Roberto, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Roberto, we're getting into a discussion clearly about, Yango drivers being asked or being requested to comply with certain laws or perhaps lose, risk, being out of business for a time. Let's get into understanding as a driver representative from your perspective, what are the main frustrations that you hear from other drivers about this compliance issue?
The problem with the compliance issue is it's the duration, the time frame it takes for you to, from application to issuance of these permits.
Yeah.
It takes something like between 4 to 6 months. Mm. And there's no cap on this.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually causes a huge financial burden on drivers, as they now have to look for the alternative of a temporary permit, which costs about $850.
Yeah.
The more temporary permit costs you at most $550 if you take the application as well as the issuance, because you need to pay at when you get issued the permit at the end, you also need to pay a $250.
Mm.
So that's about $450 that you spent on the permit. That's more, mm. let me say, more permanent, which takes 2 years. It's valid for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
but the one that's temporary is actually only valid for 28 days, meaning you need to, for those 6 or 4 months that you are going to be waiting on your more permanent permit, you will need to fork out $850 every month as a driver or as the owner of the vehicle.
But fine, but mathematically, that's not even adding up, because the temporary one is more expensive than the permanent one.
Yes, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. We want to understand what is the rationale behind it. So they need to find a way to bridge this this permanent thing and the temporary thing. They need to find a way to bridge this thing. Some way we need to get a leeway while you wait for those 4 to 6.
Mm-hmm. And it looks like I'm losing him. Okay.
I lost you there for a while.
Okay, yeah, I did. We're back now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is the frustration that most drivers are currently having. And as well, there's also the code of conduct, which at some police stations, it takes a bit longer than others, 2 to 3 months and so on. So you need that code of conduct to apply for the carrier permit. It's a requirement on top of a requirement. You understand?
Yeah.
So it kind of blocks the chain. It kind of blocks the chain. The movement of whatever you want at the end is getting held up by the first requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somewhere last year, the Minister Veikone Kundi spoke about obviously this a permit whereby like a rented out permit or so, and therefore we expected it by we, I mean the public obviously, and those as drivers and our younger drivers, taxi drivers, all those are transport, expected perhaps the rollout to be maybe not exactly smooth, but not take such a long period of time. But then what do you say about licensing delays that then push willing workers off the road for months or weeks? And what does that actually mean for the average Namibian?
It's not only the delays and the frustration it brings. It also brings legal implications as currently those drivers, to say, are operating illegally.
Yeah.
When a traffic officer stops you, you actually get a fine. We are talking about $2,500.
Roberto?
It's not a business where you can have off days and so on, because the money is already so little that you get in from this business.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a business where you can take off days. You need to be behind the wheel daily to really make something out of this thing.
And put bread on the table.
Mm-hmm. So the implications will be very severe. It will not only be the driver or the owner.
Mm.
It goes back to putting bread on the table. A lot of young people are doing this thing currently, and they will be sent back to the streets.
Yeah.
They will be sent back home. You
mm-hmm.
understand?
Mm-hmm.
And they are going to sit around at home being frustrated again, and they are going to end up at places where they really don't want to go and end up. So because you are sitting at home, what else can you do? We already have an unemployment problem.
Mm-hmm.
And we are exactly, what are we doing? We need to look for solutions instead of punishing people.
Mm.
Because what we are doing now currently is punishing people, if I can, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Robert, and I've been calling you Roberto so much. Robert, now some people might say, just wait it out. And for someone on a daily earnings, what are the options? And I know you speak about a lot of young people being in the business of Yengo. Perhaps also give us a thorough estimation of just thoroughly see, is it which age majority is mostly the people that are driving Yengos or in the Yengo business?
Yeah, I don't want to speculate, but according to my experience and I've been rubbing shoulders with people on platforms, on WhatsApp groups, and so on.
And
what I notice is they are somewhere between, I'd say, 25 and 40 years old.
Okay.
Relative. We are talking about the cream of the crop of the country. We are talking about the youth of the country.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the youth now we are talking about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And
you can just imagine.
Of course. What is your message to the relevant authorities?
Well, what I'd like to say is we want to comply. We are complying. Most of us have applied.
Yeah.
It's just that the processes are taking so long. They need to streamline these processes, make them more faster. Let's get away from these old and redundant laws and regulations. Because if I can take an example,
mm-hmm.
for a young person who is below the age of 25,
yeah.
You can't have an endorsement on your license. Like, let me say a GP endorsement or a PDP, you need to be of certain age. So when we are still using laws like this, we are actually shutting out people from developing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because literally most jobs require a driver's license. Other specialized jobs will again require to have an endorsement on your license. So
yeah.
Simple regulations like that, we are actually busy cutting off people from developing themselves,
mm-hmm.
while we should be making things easier. We live in a free country. We have the laws, we have the ways and the means. Why don't we amend these laws?
I hear you.
And regulations. Why don't we amend them? We have the power.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently. We do. We regulate and we change, we amend other laws. Why don't we do these things also with things that need to empower our young people?
Yeah. Robert, if you're given the opportunity now to speak directly to the Minister of Transport, Works and Transport, that is being Minister Veikone Kundi, what is your specific message to him and how would you want him to thoroughly handle this?
I would like him to be humane in the first place. I would ask him to be humane in the first place, and let's not always jump to the solutions that seem like a punishment, because looking at it from our side,
yeah.
it looks like a punishment. doesn't look like somebody who's looking for solutions. So I would ask him to be humane in the first place. Mm-hmm. Secondly, let's try to look for ways we can make things easier, faster, streamline these processes, because I mean, it's old, it's redundant, and we can't be going back instead of going forward.
Yeah.
If we can stick reflectors to donkeys, then I mean, we can find some way to, you know, work on these long processes that are so drawn out.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Yes.
And lastly, your message to your fellow counterparts, Iyengo.
My fellow counterparts to, and to all stakeholders, let's respect each other. Drivers, let's respect our customers, because they put that money in your pocket, literally. Also, it goes both ways. Yeah. Customers, let's respect the drivers. Also, these people come from homes. Some of them are older than you. Some are maybe younger than you, yes. But let's take each other's hands and take this thing forward.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. Lastly, how would you say the younger transportation is changing Namibia's way of doing business, you know, especially when it's late at night, and the trust also from the people themselves, how they can freely be out perhaps 12 o'clock in the evening and they are more comfortable to request for a Yango. How in general would you say this transportation is changing Namibia's landscape overall?
First of all, what I'll comment there on that topic is the safety issue.
Mm.
It is relatively quite safe. We have a few instances here and there, mm-hmm. where you find humans interacting. You will have differences. You will have conflict now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But they are quite rare and a few and in between. But let's go to the safety issue. It's quite safe. And also, it at night, people who like going out, it deters people from taking their own vehicles, driving around, consuming alcohol, and mm-hmm. all these things, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
So we are also trying to curb those things. It will just be, it works towards the greater good of everybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Robert, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis. We do appreciate your time with us. And I certainly believe that with time, and hopefully in the shortest period of time, there will be an amicable solution between the ministry, the relevant stakeholders, and the younger transportation industry as a whole.
We hope so too, ma'am. And we are looking forward that we'll reach such a stage.
Okay.
We, as drivers, we really want to comply, mm-hmm. because nobody wants to do things illegally or earn money illegally. You understand?
Yeah.
Yes, and we would really appreciate it if we can find a middle ground to this thing and come to a favorable conclusion to all stakeholders involved.
Okay. Robert Gossip, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, ma'am. Okay. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thank you.
And there you had it from Robert Gossip. He is a younger driver's representative, speaking about frustrations that are mounting from younger drivers in terms of the compliance issues that the Ministry of Works and Transport through Minister Veiko Nekundi has issued a while ago. Nonetheless, this is On the Reading News Analysis. Perhaps you are yourself a younger driver. Should I say perhaps consumer? You're on the other side of the receiving end. Perhaps you have certain issues that you want to speak about in regards to this, or perhaps just your opinion and contribution, how perhaps this could be thoroughly and properly dealt with from both parties. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. 083-288-401. Or you are a younger driver yourself and you would want to come through and air opinions or contributions, please feel free. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Nonetheless, we pause right here, take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned for more right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna ebito danjuka okukwetera oipindi konu konda doi nawa nuneudo otukwetera o special ange tashake ngeje pa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. This still is your Prime News right here on the radio, on Eagle FM, on the Reading News Analysis. Now we go to economic indicators, and thereafter you can expect some international news. Now, one US dollar today is equals to 16.59 Namibian dollars. That's 16 Namibian dollars point 59 cents. And one Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 87 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 52 cents, while 1 pound sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 41 cents. 1 euro is equals to 19 Namibian dollars, 0.42 cents. And not to leave out our neighboring Botswana pula being 1 Namibian dollar and 23 cents. And now we cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off with some health news right in South Africa, where they're talking about health risks of vaping for young people.
Vaping floods young brains with nicotine. Nicotine hijacks cognitive thinking, mood and focus. One pod hits like 20 cigarettes, and only one of them can lead to addiction. It is not water vapor, they are breathing heavy metals, poison that scars their lungs. The peril that has attracted many young people can lead to popcorn lung, which is a serious respiratory disease that causes inflammation of small airways in the lungs. Long-term use can lead to cancer and other diseases.
Because we are seeing this a lot in schools, are still developing from their brain right to their toes. So if we are introducing these dangerous chemicals to the brain, we are affecting their brain cell development. We are affecting their cognitive thinking. The way they will think now, they won't be thinking like people who are not exposed to this. The way they will act. You know, we start seeing the mood swings also, because remember, nicotine is addictive and it's part of the chemicals.
Vaping hides in behavior. Parents are advised to be aware of their children's behavior and movements.
Put 10 runs, they disappears because they need this, they are craving this. Nanny will start disappearing. They'll start lying. They'll start smelling nice. Remember this flavorance that they put there? They smell nice. You start smelling something that you're not used to your child. You must start talking and engaging, because We need to catch them early.
Some concerned parents in Bloemfontein have called on the provincial government and education department to intervene as children may turn to illegal activities due to addiction to vapes.
Primary concern is what will the children end up engaging into to feed the need, because the vapes are expensive. And in addition to being expensive, once they have developed the dependency and we don't give them enough allowance to cover the dependency, they are going to end up engaging in illegal activities, stealing firstly from us as parents, and then it will flow over to them stealing outside their homes. And it's a serious concern for me as a parent in that we are now in a process of breeding potential criminals.
Basha bali HIV negative ke yona ntwena vape wana asina nix asina di chronic nix wana fihla mane spatala o kwale o fihla sasatsi.
It is killing our kids. They die even without having HIV or chronic diseases. We see them at hospitals struggling to breathe and even die there. The government should ban the use of vapes. Another thing they can help with is ensure young children are in activities such as karate and boxing.
While experts do not have a 30-year data on vaping, Dr. Tekisho had advised young people not to test it on their lives. Kamohelo Tsutetsi, SABC News, Bloemfontein.
Meanwhile, on youth unemployment, a call for education and training programs to be driven by industry needs.
Institutions like the National Electronic Media Institute of South Africa have conceded that collaboration between government and industry has been lacking. NAMISA CEO Trevor Ramidra says while progress has been made, including having targeted interventions, stronger links still need to be established.
They are happening right now, but we need to create those linkages with industry and co-create, allow industry to make inputs into these development initiatives. And also in the process, create a bridge, what I call transitions from training to other opportunities, which could be work experience opportunities or entrepreneurial opportunities.
Ramitla notes that with millions of young people locked out of employment, actual job placement is even more critical. He says measuring the more unified approach is another pillar to strengthen the fight against youth unemployment.
I think at the center of this really is StatsSA. All right. StatsSA is our key agency that collects data, including on labor market analysis, or quarterly they produce that labor force survey, quarterly labor force survey. I think it needs to be tweaked, and all the other stakeholders that are making input into this youth unemployment issue and the interventions that are being done, including the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative. I think it's also at the center.
At the same time, Higher Education Minister Buti Manamela says interventions at TVET colleges are starting to show results, along with partnerships, including industry.
We want to encourage industry to not just expect skills to come out of the colleges, but also to participate in the system. And it's encouraging to see some of them, going into that. But specifically on those who are already working, because our programs are not just for those who are unemployed. Redesign of TVET college spaces to include training programs that will target young people who are not in employment, education and training, or those who are already working, to use those TVET college facilities to give them extra short vocational skills, portable skills, where we will see welders, we'll see cooks, we'll see bricklayers, we'll see painters, we will see people whose skills are needed almost immediately.
Chairperson of the Progressive Business Forum and ANC Treasurer General, Dr. Gwen Ramukhopa, notes that substantial investment has been made in education, with the focus now shifting to early childhood development.
The first 1,000 days of a child is critical, and up to 5 years for cognitive development. And that is a capability of science, being analytic, to also participate in what we call maths, science, and technology skills that we need. So early childhood development, absolutely foundational and critical.
It remains to be seen how quickly stakeholders can move to address the challenges. SABC News, Johannesburg.
Meanwhile, 300 Mangaung Correctional Service inmates are set to receive certificates for completing their courses.
All right, let's take you to the Free State now, where 300 inmates from the Mangaung Correctional Center will be issued with certificates for completing courses in the Formal Education Program and Skills Development Program. Now, this is done to give recognition and acknowledgement to inmates who have completed their various courses and excelled in their academic performance. For more on this, we cross live to our reporter, Kamogelo Sikwe. Very good morning to you, Kamogelo. A positive story of inmates bettering themselves. Just talk us through the courses that they've completed.
Good morning to you and to the viewers. Well, this morning we are definitely at the Mangaung Correctional Center here in Bloemfontein. And just to give you a perspective of where we are, this is actually the same prison where Thabo Bester allegedly escaped in 2022. And today the mood is quite different. It's a jovial mood. We have about 300 inmates who are in this particular hall who will be receiving certificates. And as we have been explained to, these are certificates where some of them are receiving matric, some of them are receiving their skills development, and 14 of them will actually be graduating from UNISA, from what we understand. So there's actually quite a level of excitement in the room. There's family members who are also here to come and see some of their children and family members, of course, who are going to be receiving these certificates this morning. But I just want to bring in the person responsible for inmate care as well as empowerment, Mayor Ipomaja, just to talk to us about the programs that the correctional center actually has.
Between Uganda's
and
move to
what is it that you are actually helping the inmates with for them to ultimately receive this certificate?
Thank you very much. We have a system that called sentence management system, wherein we, through identifying the different inmate needs in terms of their own development. So we do have 12 skills development workshops, ranging from soft skills like tailoring to candle making, but to more complex skills like woodwork and leather work. So we have that array of skills workshops that we are having currently. All inmates are given the opportunity to go through those programs on a daily basis, because our program does allow that we should have inmates kept constructively busy throughout the day. As a result of that, all our inmates have the opportunity to attend skills workshops. The cohort that we are having today of skills workshops are the ones that have been declared competent in their various workshops. As and when they call their names, you'll hear their names and what their workshops are. Then we've got a cohort of inmates that are at school that are starting from ABET level 1 up to ABET level 4. We also have mother tongue for inmates who cannot read and write. And we also have a grade 10, 11, and 12 phase. Then afterwards, we have UNISA. Today, we are magnifying their achievement by coming and giving them the certificates that they deserve so well and so much. As and when they call their names, they'll stand up, but I can just confirm to you that our grade 12 for 2025, we had a 100% bachelor's pass rate. We are declared a platinum school. It was us and Kyrios only. And we are now having also the inmates who are now graduating from UNISA. They are graduating in various courses at UNISA, but we've got three who are graduating in law. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to find out, you know, one of my questions was exactly going to be in what degrees did they study? But we were also told when we arrived here that some of them are actually studying with other universities. So is it only going to be UNISA graduates, or do you have other inmates that are studying with other universities other than UNISA?
For today, we've got only UNISA graduates. We don't have other universities per se. We've got other colleges, centers, like those who are studying with Oxford Bridge, for example, and those ones we do have. But for today's purpose, we've got UNISA graduates. Yes, that's all we have.
Tell us what, you know, the level of intensity when you have to actually empower the inmates. I can just assume, you know, on my own, these are people who are in prison, and it's not the easiest job that you have.
No, it isn't really. It starts from when they enter. We conduct what we call assessment processes. It's an intensive assessment system that we're having. And based on those assessments that we're having, then inmates can be allocated to various programs that we're having at the center. We've got a real dedicated team of skills instructors and teachers, and we are really grateful for them, because to contain them, being maximum security classified inmates, can't come easy, but we have managed so far. They attend school full day. Those who are at grade 10, 11, and 12, they attend it the whole day, because that's what is demanded by the Department of Basic Education. And we really try to keep them at school so that they can meet and fulfill all the requirements. Yes.
Thank you so much for your time, Mmemaja. Mfundo, as you hear there, of course, the Department of Basic Education is also involved in this. There are a couple of professors and doctors from UNISA who are currently here. There are also other officials who are actually part of the ceremony that are coming from the Department of Education. I'm just going to bring in Dr. Dora Mukoni, who is from the Department of Education, just talk to us about, you know, how is it that the department is actually supporting this program. We've heard from Mmemaja just now that they have to keep the grade 10, 11, and 12 according to how the department prescribes them. But how is it that the department is supporting the center so that today we are here, you know, to come and witness this certification ceremony?
Good morning, ma'am. Yes, from the Department of Education.
Moving on to other news, Africa's big infrastructure push faces capital investment gaps.
And between Uganda's move to kickstart commercial oil production, Mozambique's massive LNG project, and Nigeria and Morocco's efforts to build a gas pipeline linking the two countries through the Atlantic, the continent is not short of large-scale, ambitious infrastructure projects that cut across borders. But why aren't most of these projects, all of which have multi-billion dollar price tags, why aren't they being financed by capital from within African countries? What stops African countries from lending to and investing in each other? Adrian Fielding is the director of the Africa CEO Forum. It's one of the biggest gatherings of executives and policymakers anywhere on the continent each year. We spoke about the challenge of building those capital markets at scale.
We've been speaking about scale for a few years. So in 2023, it was about building billion-dollar turnover companies. After that, it was about having a seat at the table and then a new deal. And this year, what we do is really provide a much clearer route to achieving that scale. So it's called scale or fail. And the way to achieve it is through shared ownership. And the reason that we have this focus, this obsession with scale, is that, as you can see in today's geoeconomic context, size really matters, right? More than ever, it's just blunt power. Resilience and stability come from that scale. And that's important to investors, to businesses, to political leaders alike, and ultimately to citizens.
What are the main concerns, if I can put it that way? Because we often have a lot of interesting CEOs who come into these events, executives from West Africa, Southern Africa, Eastern Africa, who show up to these events. And, you know, as you say, you know, we've been speaking about the question of scale, right, for multiple years. But what are the bottlenecks in getting that done?
So, as you might suspect, our issue is with it just being vacuous words, right? We want to actually effect change. And what has been going on the continent for a little while is the intentions are there for greater integration, for removing barriers. But the only folks who really push through those barriers, in our experience, are those entrepreneurs who make the de facto links to each other and the intra investment happen. And that's really where my challenge and our challenge is really to try and make that shared equity piece. As you know, we decline shared ownership as shared equity, shared infrastructure, and shared frameworks. On that shared equity piece, it's overcoming those barriers to investment to get East Africans, Kenyans invested in Francophone West Africa, to get North Africans invested in Central Africa, and to share that equity, to get skin in the game together. That is really a challenge because it's not only financial, it's also cultural. And that's really where we hope through the summit to get people together in the room so they speak the same language.
Can we talk about numbers for a bit? Because I know one of the main criticisms we often get is, you know, fine, we'll have CEOs here and they'll strike deals, they'll show up, you know, years later. But more often than not, we also see deals being announced on the sidelines of these events. Tens of millions of dollars in funding, in some cases, being announced for banks coming through. What sort of deal flow are we looking at from the Africa CEO Forum, at least in the medium term over the last 3 or 4 years?
So over the last 2 years, we've started tracking, and over the last 2 years, the signatures amount to over $1 billion. That counts MOUs, investments, and sort of M&A. However, what we really are proud of is when the things actually result in concrete physical progress. And the one that I like to cite on the from our co-host is that the idea of creating a mall in the capital of Rwanda, Kigali, where we're hosting it this year, came out of the 2019 Africa CEO Forum Annual Summit. It takes a while, and it's open now. I think it opened last year. So
the United Arab Emirates.
These are infrastructure projects that see the light of day after 4, 5, 6 years, right? Those are the ones that are really going to be creating value. But in terms of deals signed, you know, what proportion of those end up in actual concrete investment and value creation, I wouldn't be able to tell you over the last 2 years, but we know that those deals signed is over $1 billion. So we hope that a good proportion of that will go towards value creation on the continent, you know, tax revenues and job creation and the like.
Indeed. And one of the other interesting things about these events is the fact that we are also now hosting quite a few debates, right, as part of these conversations. There's one that's going to be focused on energy issues, right, which are particularly salient given everything that's going on in the Middle East at the moment.
Yes. I mean, we decided on this debate format for a start because we found that because we're the Africa CEO Forum, our objective is to be obsessed with serving the CEOs. However, there are other voices out there which need to be heard. And so this allows us to put forward some experts whose voices are critical. In this case, I think the two names that are going forward head to head in the energy debate, which will be pitting fossil fuels versus clean energy as the base load for industrial installations going forward. So it's a very simple question. If you're going to start a greenfield industrial installation today, should you be relying on a diverse array of clean energy, or should you be hedging your bets, or should you be hedging with fossil fuels? And we'll be pitting NJ Ayuk, who's famously in the latter camp against James Mwangi, who's...
Oh, yeah. NJ is very, 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 very pro-fossil fuels, and unashamedly so, as he would say.
Indeed, indeed, he is. And James Mwangi, on the other hand, is very much a clean energy advocate and who does a very good job as well. And both of them from very well-versed and entertaining as well background. So I'm hoping that that debate will spur some real insights.
Meanwhile, Nigeria cuts airline debts in order to ease jet fuel crisis.
Airline in this country will fly in the next 7 days if something is not done. Not because they don't want to fly, but because the pricing, not only of our tickets, but the pricing of the fuel product that we need to fly in the first place may not be available to us because we don't have the money.
Rising aviation fuel costs are no longer an airline problem. They're spilling into the broader economy, pushing up transport expenses for businesses and ultimately the price of goods for consumers. For business owners who rely on air travel to move across cities, the impact is immediate and unavoidable.
It's definitely going to affect everybody, down to those who don't even fly. Because if, for example, I'm going to bring products from a place like Lagos down to Abuja, of course, I'm going to build in the excess that, you know, comes from the cost of my transport. I'm going to build it into, you know, the sales. So it's going to affect everybody.
Meanwhile, regulators are stepping in to prevent a breakdown in the aviation sector as soaring jet fuel costs continue to strain both airlines and fuel marketers. They insist efforts are now focused on finding a balance that keeps operators in business while easing the pressure across the value chain.
We would not like to see a situation where the airlines will shut down. Inasmuch as we want the airlines to run, we also want the marketers to continue to doing their business. So we have to have a rich midway, and this is a very, very urgent matter that has to be dealt with.
The government says it's working towards preventing disruptions and maintaining stability in the sector. In the meantime, it's offering financial relief to ease pressure on airlines, targeting the backlog of debts owed to aviation agencies.
Regarding the discounts to be given to the airlines from the debts they owe to the aviation agencies, Mr. President has definitely approved a 30% discount.
For Africa's largest economy, where air travel remains key to business and regional movement, the stakes are high. Experts say any prolonged disruption could cripple beyond the aviation sector, affecting trade, investments, and connectivity across the country. Kelechi Amekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Also, experts warn of gaps as Nigeria removes electronic.
Get top scores. Yes, marathon savings at USave. Rexona Shield Roll On a Deodorant, $22.99. 8 Karas sanitary pads, just $6.99. 500 milli Nuden Pine Gel Surface Cleaner, $24.99. 2 kilo bag Surf Hand Washing Powder, only $49.99. And Dry Nips Premium Disposable Nappies, just $139.99. Hurry to your favorite USave.
Experts warn of gaps as Nigeria removes EV import duties.
Faced with rising fuel costs and inflation and a weakened purchasing power, the Nigerian government is rolling out a series of fiscal reforms to ameliorate the situation and keep the economy moving. Among the reforms is a cut in import duties on electric vehicles from 5% to 0%. Mass transit buses are now granted full duty exemption, down from 5% to 0%. The action is aimed at encouraging cheaper public transportation and support cleaner mobility alternatives at a time when fuel prices are skyrocketing. The electric vehicle market is still a very niche one in Nigeria. High upfront cost, poor charging infrastructure, and concerns over maintenance have slowed adoption. Dealers like Moniru and Imashaun are counting on the new waiver to shift that trajectory.
I think it's a good one because I am of the opinion that the federal government are beginning to see that people are beginning to welcome the idea of electric vehicle in Nigeria. And probably because of the cost, they feel that people are not buying because it's kind of expensive because of the import duty. But with the advantages it has on the environment, they decide to make that move. So I think it's a good one. More people will buy it.
But affordability is one piece of the puzzle. Nigeria's unreliable power supply remains a major hurdle for EV adoption. The government, though, has begun work on the deployment of EV charging infrastructure across the country.
Investors are beginning to see how they can build charging stations. Like we have the fuel station. Even fuel station, most of them, they run on generator. So people are beginning to see the possibility of building charging stations where you can come and charge your electric vehicles for some minutes. Just like you are buying fuel, you are refueling, so you are recharging your vehicle. So if you can't do it on your own because of light issue, you can actually make use of the charging station avenue.
Beyond transport, the policy also targets Nigeria's struggling manufacturing sector, where rising costs have forced many businesses to either scale down or shut down operations. In the new policy, the levy on manufacturing machinery has now been scrapped in a move aimed at lowering production costs and boosting industrial activity. It's a huge relief for industrialist Frank Onyebo.
I have to commend the government for these new policy pronouncements. I think they are really wonderful, and I believe for the manufacturing sector is going to go a long way in getting manufacturers back on track, because the manufacturers are actually going through a lot of very bad situation right now. A lot of manufacturers are just struggling. A lot of them are, some are actually quietly dying. A lot of warehouses are packed full with finished products that have been there for a long time, and manufacturers are unable to sell them. So this new policy, I believe, will go a long way in encouraging manufacturers.
The Manufacturers Association of Nigeria says while the policy could lower production cost and improve competitiveness if properly implemented, there is also a need to strike a delicate balance between lowering cost and protecting local industries.
We understand, for instance, in terms of government needs to lower the cost of transport and logistics, but we need to be wary of the movements in terms of the rate, so that it does not inadvertently reduce the local appetite for investment in those areas. But generally speaking, the measures that we have seen in recent times have tended to promote domestic production while being mindful of the needs of the people in an inflationary environment.
Despite the potential benefits of the new policy, industry players warn that import duty waivers alone cannot fix deeper structural challenges in the manufacturing sector.
Power supply is still not where we want it to be. Before you came, we had power failure. Sometimes you have failures for a whole day. Sometimes when you feel that things are getting okay, then suddenly there is a collapse, system collapse, or a problem with the grid somewhere. So we are still struggling with power supply. We are still struggling with other infrastructural development, like the roads you passed on. I'm sure you noticed that the roads are very bad. We've been talking about it. We've been asking the government to do something about these roads. But it's been like that. When the rain starts, it's going to be very much more difficult.
The federal government has introduced a 90-day transition phase starting from April 1st, 2026, for the new import duty waivers and tariff reductions on essential goods. This transition phase allows importers who initiated clearance before this date to use old rates, easing the shift to the new 2026 fiscal policy. DJ Bademosi, CGTN, Lagos, Nigeria.
And now for some sports, exciting news. Analysts react to record-breaking London Marathon times.
The record-breaking day of the London Marathon came barely a week after the Boston Marathon, which also saw some blistering times. Together, they're highlighting the growing standard in long-distance running. For more on this, CGTN spoke to veteran sports journalist Elias Makori from Gaborone, Botswana, and retired athlete Martin Kano, who's right here in Nairobi via Zoom. And we began by asking Makori just what the first sub-2-hour marathon could mean for athletics.
Well, 1:59:30 is massive. It's not just a world record. It's really pushing the human limits, the barrier to another unprecedented level. I've been talking to a few athletes here in Gaborone, where I am for the Golden Grand Prix. And, you know, everybody is saying it's unbelievable. It's a big inspiration. Gabby Thomas just won the 100 meters here. She's saying, Sebastian did really gives motivation to athletes that they can actually, you know, push themselves higher. I spoke to Ferdinand Omanyala, another 100 meters record holder for Africa. Again, he says what Sawe did is giving them even more motivation as athletes to perform better. So in the grand scheme of things, it's really an inspiration to the entire sport, not just for marathon running. Modern day marathons are made faster. You know, there are quite a number of reasons. Because there's research and development, especially into the racing shoes that they're using. Nike went into the labs, did the research, came up with the Sub 2, Zoom Vaporfly and other varieties of shoes. Adidas was also busy doing the research. They have come up with a super shoe, which Sebastian raced with today. So research and development has been a big factor. And of course, changing training techniques, nutrition, a lot of science has been brought into the sport. And that's why you see the limit, being pushed quite frequently.
Now, DRC Congo's planned dollar ban sparks mixed reactions.
US dollars will be banned across the DRC to tighten control on foreign cash flows and fight money laundering. The directive from the Central Bank of Congo comes into force in April next year. All transactions in foreign currencies will also have to be carried out through banks.
These measures reflect the central bank's commitment to pursuing a prudent, proactive, and credible monetary policy to support the stability and strength of the Congolese franc and reinforce confidence in our financial system.
Congolese people have been using US dollars since the late 1990s, after their local currency, the franc, lost value during the era of President Mobutu Sese Seko. Some business people in Kinshasa feel the April 2027 deadline announced by the bank is too soon.
I support the measure, but the date it's supposed to take effect is too soon. The government should implement the ban after 5 or 10 years to enable our economy to stabilize and promote exports, because we need around 10 years from now to boost exports.
In 2024, the DRC ordered all banks to set up electronic payment terminals to accept only Congolese francs in a bid to stabilize the local currency. But the directive had little impact. One US dollar is now trading at 2,300 Congolese francs. Reactions about the plan to ban the use of dollars has been mixed.
We consider it a good directive that will increase the value of our currency, because nowadays money changers keep setting their own exchange rates, which really affect us.
I heard about that measure the governor mentioned. We are only waiting to see how it will be implemented. I think it will be difficult.
Over the past 4 years, the DRC has introduced financial reforms that seek to redirect foreign transactions into banking channels to curb corruption and money laundering.
The government's decision to ban the use of dollars for daily transactions starting next year comes after previous attempts to strengthen the Congolese franc proved ineffective. Experts say its success will be determined by the enforcement measures carried out in this country, with a large informal sector where most transactions are carried out using cash. Chris Ochamringa, CGTN, Kinshasa, Democratic Republic of Congo.
I switch over to international news. The UAE exits OPEC. Gas prices spiked to the highest in 4 years.
The United Arab Emirates says that it is withdrawing from OPEC and OPEC Plus. OPEC is a decades-old cartel of the world's largest oil-producing exporters. The energy minister says that it will make it easier for the UAE to meet changing demand, but it is a major blow to OPEC at a time when the Iran war has triggered a global energy crisis and as the price of oil hits three-week highs. CNN's Eleni Giokos joins me now from Dubai. Eleni, and so with the UAE doing this and making this announcement today, I believe they are the third or fourth largest producer among OPEC members. Talk about the significance here and the impact that it's already having within the region.
Yeah, it's the third largest producer within OPEC, and it's really significant. I mean, frankly, it's a bombshell announcement today, Biana. You know, they joined in 1967, one of the founding members, and that was just a few years before the formation of the UAE. And this is, you know, really going to shape what we see in the oil markets. And you were talking about WTI, you know, responding quite aggressively on the back of this news. And we've seen an increase in oil prices as we hear one of the oldest members withdrawing from this organization. This is importantly an organization that can exert influence on oil prices. It has the ability to control supply. So when oil prices go high, then, you know, we start to see quotas from these oil producing nations, and that starts to temper off oil prices. But when oil prices are low, that is also when they step in specifically to protect oil producers, that if oil prices are below what it costs to produce a barrel of oil, they can also play around with that. That's why they're viewed as a cartel. The UAE energy minister says this is not a political decision, but many people are focusing on the timing, given that we are currently in the largest energy crisis in the history of markets. Take a listen to what he said.
This is not a political decision. This is a pure policy position and repositioning us to be it is in front of the world, taking the right decision at the speed that we aspire for. To us, it's the consumers are critical. To us, we need to attain to these countries who entrusted us to build the refineries based on our crude. And our crude today, Murban, is one of the cleanest, if not the cleanest crude on earth.
So really important to note here that in the statement that was released today by media, they say that when they joined the alliance, they have made significant contributions as well as even greater sacrifices, they say, for the benefit of all. And that's because they've been adhering to a quota system. As of April 2025, UAE was allowed to sell 3.5 million barrels of oil per day, when the capacity is around 5 million barrels of oil per day. And given that we've seen not only attacks by Iran on critical energy infrastructure targeted here on the UAE as well as other Gulf states, but also the closure of the Strait of Hormuz has completely changed the way the UAE views its position in the global energy markets. And they're saying they're going to start focusing on national interests and continue their commitment to stabilizing oil prices. But Biana, any way you look at this, many people are questioning the fate of OPEC right now, whether this is a precursor to more countries leaving OPEC, and importantly, what happens to oil prices from here.
And the future relationship, once again, at question between the Saudis and the Emiratis as well. Eleni Giokos, thank you so much.
Gas prices are surging to the highest level in nearly 4 years because, of course, of deadlocked Iran war. And the talks, it just aren't going anywhere and are rattling the global economy. Now, the national average is now $4.18 a gallon. That's up nearly 7 cents from just yesterday, and the highest price since the war began. And just to get kind of a better sense or a window into what we're watching right now, I think it's important to look back over time. I'm going to draw a little bit on the magic wall and try not to make a fool of myself as Richard is watching me here. We said 418 is where things stand today. And I think when you look at the run-up, just since the start of the war, what's so notable is the speed and scale of the surge of the prices, but also that prices were below $3 a gallon right before this was all happening. At the end of last year, at the start of January, everything the Trump administration wanted on this front, Richard, was happening. Now, if you look back over to the Ukraine conflict and kind of the aftermath of that in the near term, and you saw gas prices topping $5, came back down pretty steadily since. So, Richard, we haven't hit the $5 mark yet.
And now that brings us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radio News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program. Goodbye.